Okay.
Case number 10,928, John and Catherine Yost, east of Route 16, Brock Hill Road, east of Bay Shore Drive, being Lot 9, Block A within Brock Hill Beach Development. Appealing director's decision that the lot requires only a side yard setback instead of a corner side yard setback because it lies adjacent to a pedestrian access rather than a street.
Okay. And we get started. I'd like to have the director, if you would like to come up. You want to do his?
See what he has to say.
Okay.
Mr. Lang said, see what he had to say. Is that
what you gentlemen had to say?
Well, let me start by giving you the procedural posture, and I'll assume maybe you need to be brought up to speed. I'm probably wrong on that.
Thank you.
I submitted a letter today this morning with some exhibits. Last year, I think everybody was here, but maybe Mr. Rickard, that you all approved a variance for a house that was being moved on Broadkill Beach. If I take you back there, the two houses were attached together, and the Pamelias asked for a variance. They were moving the house, but they asked for a variance to get inside the side yard setback next to a beach access corner lot, and that's really what's at issue. They're right on Bay Shore Drive and the bay, and then on the north side of their house is this road that's called a pedestrian access. Okay? When they applied, they were told they needed a variance. They came here and asked for a variance, and I appeared on behalf of the Yost in opposition of it. You all granted the variance into the 15-yard setback. I believe it was 5 they needed. And I appealed, the Yost appealed to Superior Court, and the Superior Court reversed your decision, saying there wasn't substantial evidence to give them the variance. And then the Pamelios in Superior Court asked for re-argument, I believe it is, and Mr. Mandelas, if he gets time to speak after me, he'll clarify this record. So as that's pending, I get a letter from your counsel, your former counsel, Mr. Burrell, informing me that the director has indicated that this corner lot is not, in fact, a corner lot because the road next to it was identified on the tax map as a road. However, on the recorded plot, it says pedestrian access, and therefore it's not a street, and therefore you don't need a 15-foot setback, you just need 10. And I'm in the unenviable position of respectfully disagreeing with Mr. Lank, who it's probably no secret that I go to him for advice sometimes, but in this case I do think he's wrong. So we had this reversal pending in Superior Court with a motion for new argument, or I don't know where that was going. And then, then meanwhile, my clients, or I get noticed that said, by the way, they didn't need this in the first place. So, I have a great deal of respect for the written word, and Mr. Mandelas submitted last week, or at least it was dated January 2nd, a 10-page memorandum of law on this subject. Really, the subject is this pedestrian access a street? And what is the definition of street? Mrs. Isaacs forwarded that memorandum to me late last week, and that's when I submitted the response. Without reading that or going through it piece by piece, because there's some finer points in it, I imagine your new attorney is going to look at it and maybe give you advice, and you all want to think about it if you hadn't had a chance to read it. But our argument simply is that the definition of street does encompass a pedestrian access or an access. And if you look at the plain statute as it's written, it says a street is a public or private thoroughfare which affords the principal means of access to abutting properties, whether designated as a freeway, expressway, highway, road, avenue, boulevard, lane, place, circle, or however otherwise designated. And in my letter to you all, I put in things like the definition of what a thoroughfare is, which it says a way or place or passage open at both ends. If you look at my exhibits and Mr. Mandelis' first exhibit, it actually shows you the site, the recorded plots of this section of Broad Kill, and I've included a later section there, where you see about every 8 blocks on the ocean, you'll see these access points. And the access point are 20 feet. The actual road is 30 feet. And you'll see that it connects Bayshore Drive to the public beach. So if you simply look at the definition of a street, it is a thoroughfare, it is public, and it provides the principal access to both properties. I mean, that's that simple. And when I read Mr. Mandelis' argument, where he says, well, there's a definition of alley, and that's something different, that provides, by definition, secondary access. This is the only access to the beach. That is these access points, or the one that's in question here. Mr. Mandelis also speaks of some definitions dealing with how they relate to signs or sidewalks, which I think is kind of a red herring. I think what the board should do, and what Mr. Lank has done, is looked at the definition and concluded when it says pedestrian access, that's not a street. And I submit to you that there's nothing in the definition of street that requires by any means that it has to be vehicular. I provide a few paragraphs in there which would, I believe, espouse on what the intent of these setbacks are to give more cushion, not only to the private owner, but to the public. And you need more cushion, if you will, in a public situation than you do a private. And that makes sense. So whether it's pedestrian or vehicular, the people that go back and forth to the beach on there, they don't need to be in somebody's living room, so to speak. And the people who live in that private property should be afforded that extra cushion, if you will. It may be arbitrary, but the code says it's 5 feet. So based on just looking at the plain language of the statute, I don't think it excludes pedestrian access. And this is for what it's worth, the survey that was submitted by the Pamilios, stated on the survey that they submitted to where they were going to locate, even though I think Mr. Lank relied on the tax map where it said road, and then he discovered it was pedestrian access afterwards. I'm not sure how that timing played out. But the survey that was submitted with the original access the original application described this street as a pedestrian access. And the surveyor, who was Wingate and Eschenbaum for the applicants, the certified surveyor required, or they believed it required, the 15-foot because they thought it was a corner lot. And finally, there is some precedent in this case. I searched variances on Broad Kill Beach, and I found lot 37, which is just down the way towards Beach Plum Island. And you can see lot 37 on tab A in the second survey. And that lot is on a same-size lot, and it's on a property, it abuts a street, if you will, that's labeled access. I don't believe it says pedestrian access, it just says access. And that's 20 feet. And I'll refer to that as, I think it's case number, well, it's 2008, and it's tab C. And as you can see on that, that applicant, for what this board looked at in 2008, required that they adhere to the 15-foot, or in turn made them ask for a variance in that corner lot. And that survey is attached as well. And it's interesting to note on the survey that was applied for in that way, whereas the one in this one that you approved more recently said pedestrian access, but the surveyor in this case described that property or that street next to the lot where they were asking for a variance as a walkway. So it was clearly back then noted that it was pedestrian, or at least the record reflected. One response might be, well, that was wrong too. That may be a response of the board. So, that's why we think that y'all made the right decision in the first place. This is putting the grant of the variance aside, just in saying, yeah, this is a corner lot, because the definition is pretty clear, and because the intent of having a little more setback in access points, I think makes sense, and you have some precedent here that you've done it before. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Yep.
Sir?
Let me present now, or when you open the public hearing, Mr.
Yeah, go ahead and present.
Thank you very much. My name is Glenn Mandalis. I'm an attorney with Baird Mandalis in Dover, Delaware. I represent Bert and Miriam Pamilio, who are in the back here. This evening, Mr. Chairman, I'm in the unenviable position of disagreeing with Mr. Willard, a person who I, from time to time, go to for advice. However, I'm in the unenviable position of agreeing with the director. I wanted to just step back for a moment and talk briefly sort of from a common sense perspective and give an overview of the circumstances. And Mr. Willard did a fine job of giving kind of the procedural posture where this matter is currently rests, being going to Superior Court and kind of pending up there, and then kind of this new perspective on whether it's actually a corner lot or not. But from a common sense kind of perspective, the reason for increased setbacks on corner lots, and this is one of the things that was mentioned actually in the Superior Court opinion that reversed this board in this exact case, the reason for those increased setbacks on corner lots are predominantly for view sheds for oncoming traffic, where you have two instances where vehicular traffic is approaching each other. You need some ability to see which automobiles are approaching. In this instance, we're not dealing with a case where we've got vehicular traffic coming together at an intersection. Here we've got Bayshore Avenue, which is vehicular, and we've got a pedestrian access way to the beach, people walking back and forth to the bay. I have a picture of it, if it helps you all. This is something I downloaded just from Google today, and I'd be happy to submit it if it helps. As those are being handed out, what this depicts is the property looking from Bayshore Avenue toward the bay, where the residence currently sits. This is the Pamilio's restaurant residence. Where it currently sits is before it was moved.
Mr. Council, excuse me, they're interrupting. Can you wait until that gets
absolutely
down there?
Sure.
So they know what you're talking about.
Sure. Thanks. I may.
That's right.
So what you have in front of you on the right-hand side of the photograph is the Pamilio's residence. I don't know when Google actually did this picture, but it was prior to the time that you all originally granted the variance for them to move this residence a little bit closer to the access way. They have since done that, but the public access is this area right here, this kind of dirt path looking area. It's not the area right beside it, which is a driveway that services the building to the left. It's this dirt kind of area right there. So that's what we're talking about. And this indeed is actually a view from where the Yost property sits, because the Yost property is right on this side of Bayshore Avenue. So this is kind of the view that the Yost have as they look toward the bay. So I wanted to kind of give you a common sense overview of how I view a corner lot and the reasons why you have an increased setback for what is truly a corner lot. This, we maintain, is not a corner lot because it's not two streets abutting each other. In our view, it's a public access way and then a street abutting the public access way. I need to digress just for a moment before going into some of the other details, because I also think it's important to note that to get before this board, the privilege of coming before this board, there's a legal standard that you have to meet to be able to even come here and make your case. In the appeal document filed to this board, Mr. Willard set out that he believed that the decision of the director was legally incorrect and that it was arbitrary and capricious. Those are legal standards, but they're not the right legal standard to get before this board. To come before this board, you have to demonstrate that you've been aggrieved by a decision of, in this case, the director. And this evening, through Mr. Willard's presentation and through the documents he submitted, I haven't seen anywhere where there's been an argument that somehow the Yosts have been aggrieved by the director's decision. And indeed, if you wanted to argue that somehow moving the home closer to the pedestrian access way aggrieves the Yosts, again, this is a picture from the Yosts' property. They don't have a view of the bay to begin with. They have a view they can see the sky, but they can't really see the bay. So I'm not sure that there's any real argument that they're even aggrieved by moving the building, the residence, that much closer to the to the accessway. So the standard here, again, is that you have to be aggrieved. Haven't seen that demonstrated anyplace. And even if it had been demonstrated here this evening in Mr. Willard's testimony, the public was not notice of on how the Yosts have maybe been aggrieved. So nobody who's here who might want to testify was able to adequately prepare for how they might have been aggrieved. So we think that as a threshold matter, this shouldn't even be before you because there's been no demonstration that they've been aggrieved. And the appeal should be rejected on those grounds alone. But even if you don't reject the appeal on those grounds, the decision of the director, in our view, is right and should be sustained. But this isn't the first time the county has seemingly been right and the Yosts have forced my client to pursue other ways to gain relief. So moving on then to the actual reasons why we think that Mr. Lank in this instance was correct. Mr. Willard did a good job of reading the definition of street. It's always kind of amazing to me how two lawyers can read the same definition and come to different conclusions. But it's happened again in this case. The definition has a couple important elements that I think are relevant and important for us to look at. One of them is that the minimum width of a street right-of-way shall be 50 feet. Within section 115-4B, it says that exact sentence. The minimum width of a street right-of-way shall be 50 feet. In this case, as you know, we're dealing with 20 feet, not 50 feet. That kind of demonstrates that county council, in making this legislation, didn't intend for a 20-foot wide dirt path leading to the bay to be declared, for pedestrian access, by the way, to be declared in any way a street. In addition, the definition requires the public or private thoroughfare in question to, and this is quoted, afford the principal means of access to abutting properties. Mr. Willard and I disagree on whether this is a principal access to abutting properties. I think the abutting properties we're talking about are the properties that, in this case, are principally served by Bayshore Avenue, not by the public access. The beach access really is most analogous to maybe a long walkway that provides some access to the beach, but it's not a principal access to abutting properties. County Council, in addition, when you take a comprehensive review of the code, it doesn't look to me as if they intended the definition of street to include a pedestrian beach access. And if you look to section 115-166C, that section identifies walkways, sidewalks, streets, alleys, and it makes clear that all of those things are different. So a street is not as, the street definition is not as encompassing, I think, as counsel for the Yosts would have you accept. Another reason that I think that the code makes clear that in this case we're not talking about a street is, for example, a 16-foot alley under the code that is dedicated to vehicular traffic. If that was what we were talking about here, the Pamilios would only be required to have a 10-foot setback. But in this case, an argument's being made that a pedestrian accessway to the beach somehow has a greater standard and requires more setback than just a 16-foot alley that's dedicated to vehicular traffic. I can't imagine that city council or that county council would want, in the case of a vehicular traveled alley, to only have 10-foot setback, but in the case of pedestrians walking to the beach back and forth, somehow we now are needed to have 15 feet. It just doesn't seem to make much sense. Additionally, there's nothing in the original plot that's been filed with the Sussex County Recorder of Deeds that demonstrates that the pedestrian access was intended to be a street. It's labeled on that plat, which I think you have. If you don't, I have copies of it here. It's labeled on that plat that was recorded in Book 8 at page 87 as a pedestrian access. Now, there's other roads identified on this on this plat that was recorded during the original subdivision. Bay Shore is identified as a drive. Trout is identified as an avenue. Striper is identified as a road. Flounder is identified as an avenue. But the accessways, those leading to the bay, they simply say pedestrian access. It doesn't evidence any intent that this was meant to be a street. Looking at this kind of from a pragmatic perspective, for doing nothing wrong, it seems to me that the Pamilios have been put through quite a bit. In the first instance, where the county advised that a variance was needed. The Pamilios submitted and rightfully came here, and I think you rightfully granted that variance. And for that reason alone, I don't think the decision you made in a separate case that Mr. Willard raised has any kind of precedential value. That case, like this one, came before you, and you were basically given an overview of the case in which you were instructed that they needed a variance to be able to move forward. You didn't make a positive decision as to whether this was a street or not a street. You were simply determining whether they satisfied the legal standard to get a variance from the 15-foot from the 15-foot setback. So I don't think this board has ever actually made a decision as to whether this pedestrian access way is a street or not a street. So they came before you, they got the variance, I think rightfully so, as I said, and they did it at considerable cost. But unfortunately, the case did go to the Superior Court, and I think for technical reasons, the court reversed your decision. Unfortunately reversed your decision, because again, I think at the end of the day, your decision was the right one. There might have been some technical details that were missed, and the court reversed on those for those reasons, but I don't think the essence of your decision was wrong. I think your decision was right. But that left the Pamilios in the awkward position again of now not having granted the relief, having moved the building already to the lot based upon the variance that was granted. And I should note that if this appeal is affirmed, the Pamilios would be required to then turn the building and do substantial interior renovations to make that building work on that lot. And that's a result that I hope we don't end up having. But now we're back here, and the county has correctly again taken action, determining that the variance was not needed, and the oaths again have forced this appeal. So twice now, through this board granting a variance and through the director making a determination that this is not a street, twice now the county, I think, has done the right thing, and twice now my client's been forced to take additional actions because the oaths keep appealing. Quite honestly, we think it's time that a decision needs to be made and this matter sort of has to be brought to an end. And hopefully the oaths will concede at this level this time around if we're lucky enough to have your decision in our favor. So we respectfully do request that you affirm the Director of Planning and Zoning and reject this appeal. I should note that given the historical kind of litigious nature of the oaths, when you're making your decision tonight, I would appreciate it if I'm lucky enough for you to go our way, I would appreciate it if you'd maybe adopt some of the reasons identified in the memo that we submitted as your reasons for making the decision you make. It would simply help me if I'm forced to litigate at the superior level. It'd be easier for me to make clear to the judge that you relied upon substantial evidence to make your decision. I thank you very much for your time. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Are there any questions for counsel? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, well, the first thing we'll need a motion to...
Mr. Light, would you do his? I'm just going to ask you a moment, but we need a two-part motion on this. One for the to hold appeal the director's decision, and then we'll do one on the case.
Pardon?
I will let him get done, then I'll come down there.
Not being a member of the bar, I need to be sworn.
Yes. Please state your name and address for the record.
Florence B. Lang, 510 West Market Street, Georgetown, Delaware.
You swear the testimony you're about to give is the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
You said not to. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Seems like I'm here representing myself. The... back up a little bit. In the weeks ago, before the application was filed for an appeal, the question was raised as to the status of the accessway adjoining this property. If you look at the tax map, it doesn't show any notation. We went to there was a reference made to a recorded plot, which was in plot book 8, page 87, which was recorded in 1969. And I went and looked at that plot and saw that what we consider to be a street at Broadkill, the reason that the applicants first had to apply for the variance to the board, was actually labeled as a pedestrian access. And in the county, there's along the bay and along the ocean front probably the majority of the subdivisions have access ways. And they vary from 5 feet to 20 foot. Different projects have different widths of access. Majority of them being along the oceanfront and majority of them being north of Bethany Beach. But there are some also at Broadkill, Middlesex Beach, South Bethany, which is now incorporated. That didn't help me any because that's a separate jurisdiction. And I went in and just did a real quick review at the close of the work today just to see about how many projects there are without even looking at new projects in the last 3 or 4 years because they're not on tax map. They're on separate plots. So I found about 20 projects that have walkways, access ways. They're all labeled something a little different. And again, they vary from 5 feet, 10 feet to 19 feet and even 20 in this case. They are labeled and referenced as either walkway, access way, pedestrian access, something of that nature. And none of those are required to have 15-foot setback. They're considered a pedestrian access, they're not considered a street, they're not considered a corner lot. And thereby, we, in reviewing this application, it's my opinion, and I'll stand by it, that this is a pedestrian access. It's not an access way for vehicular use, so it's not a corner lot. So therefore, the setback in this case would only be required to be 10 foot. And Mr. Willard made reference that there was a precedent being established because there was a previous application also at Broadkill Beach further to the south on lot 37, I believe he said. And again, that was an area where it's labeled as access. It's not labeled as pedestrian access. And the width of that right away, the argument could be that it's more than 16 foot, so it's more than an alley, so it may be a street. So we don't know. Could be. It's across from, in those lots, most of those are across from a street that runs towards the bay and perpendicular to Bayshore Drive. Just in reference or quick reference, I looked at Tower Shores, Bethany Village, Cotton Patch Hills, Sea Dell Estates, Ocean Breezes, and Bethany Dunes, along with 15 or so others. Just using a few names, throw them out. And again, they all have different walkway paths, trails, or whatever. For years now, the Planning and Zoning Commission and review of subdivisions and residential planning communities. Typically, there's pedestrian access ways, they're called trails, they're called walkways, they're called bike paths, you name it. They've got a different name in every project. But they're all intended for the same purpose. They're for non-vehicular use. They're not corner lots. They're interconnected with access ways from streets to those open spaces and trails. And in this case, I still feel that this is pedestrian access, as noted. It's not a street, so it's not a corner. Now, if this case goes to, if the board were to reverse or it went through court and got reversed again, we would have to go back and look at all those projects and reestablish whether they were corner lots or whether they're just lots next to an access way going to open space or the bay or the ocean or wherever to connect to a trail or whichever. So that would probably be another thing that we would have to do, but it's nothing that can't be done, so that's not a problem. And again, we have, they're called trails, walkways, paths, the access interconnection from streets through between lots to get to open space, stormwater management areas, or interconnection to a trail for use by the community more than just affecting an individual site. And again, they vary in width. 5 foot, probably the majority, 8 foot, 5 to 8 foot, then they jump up to 19 to 20 foot. I even found one that was 40. Wasn't a street, but it was larger than an alley, so that became a question of whether or not it was a street or not. It was designated as the access to the open space, so I would say it was not a street, even in that case. The difficulty, as I said when I first started, was that the tax maps don't label streets and access ways and walkways. They just show the parcels involved in questions and label the streets, et cetera, and they do label walkways, but they don't necessarily say what they are. They just show a 5-foot strip going out to the ocean or the bay or whatever it interconnects with.
Common ground?
Yeah, common element, open space typically, but. That's without getting into the code. I think both attorneys represented themselves well. Got opinion from both sides.
I think they
and
did.
You got our little layman opinion of what we feel is normal.
I think they both did well.
Mr. Lank, you're familiar with the property to the north of the pedestrian access? You've seen...
To the north in the photograph?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it would appear that that structure is 10 feet from the property line.
It would appear so, but it appears that if that dirt, what appears to be sand, I'll say sand because it's a broad kill and typically you don't get grass, that you have sand there that is probably 20 feet wide. It's questionable whether there's 10 foot from that pedestrian access to that structure, just in the photograph. And it could be because the angle that it was taken from is not taken down right. The center of the center. So it's mm-hmm. a little misleading on mm-hmm. how that multi-story structure to the left sits from the site in question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, based on the picture, it appears that the pedestrian, if the pedestrian access is 20 feet, then that driveway is probably 10. But like you say,
yeah, you have to assume because you don't really know.
Right.
Without getting a survey for that site, and we could probably find one if we needed to, but the photo, just because of the angle, it makes it misleading as to whether or not, if that's a 20 foot, because it's sandy, whether that what appears to be grass doesn't appear to be half the distance, but it may be.
John,
it hadn't been a question, so I assume that is correct.
John, I had gone up and looked at that. You're right. That's about a 10 foot on the side there, that driveway.
you visited the site?
Yes, I did.
Do you know if there was a variant or a an approval, or was it just assumed that that too had a 10?
I don't have a doubt that it's not correct. I just, by the picture, it's kind of misleading. It doesn't look like half the distance of that 20-foot sandy strip.
Right.
And you get a dark color versus a lighter color. It's misleading
sure.
anyway.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if that property also previously had a decision by you or not.
But we could look it up in the index to find out.
Mr. Lank, I got a question. Are vehicles allowed to use that?
In this case, I would say not. It's labeled as a pedestrian access, but it would be subject to the HOA if there is one. It would also be limited by DENREC on whether or not they could use it for access by vehicle to the beach, and I doubt it. Just pedestrian access.
So it should be signs up, no vehicles then?
Should be.
Yeah, there was no tire marks at all like other beach accesses to the...
I'm just saying, if I went to the beach down there, four-wheel drive vehicle, could I go that way all the way to the end?
There's limited access points to get to the beach at Broadkill.
Right.
Very limited. Designated.
And this is not one of them. This is not one of them. This is not one of them.
It's on
the north end.
Yeah.
So it should have signs, no vehicles then?
Right, because it's controlled to DENREC on the south end especially.
Okay.
Mr. Hudson, do you have any questions? No. Mr. Mills, do you have any more questions?
No other questions.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Chairman, I have a few.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When I was looking at this plot from 1969 that you referenced, I noticed that there's parts that say Block A, Block B, Block C, Block D, Block E. When you were reviewing this plot and making your determination, did you take that into account at all?
No, I noticed it, but it's basically the Block A is the bayfront lots. Lot B is just a lot that's surrounded by streets. It'd be very difficult to develop, but it's surrounded. And then Lot C, D, E, and et cetera would be blocks that or to the southerly side of Bayshore Drive that back up to Old Broadkill Creek, and they're separated by block numbers because of streets in between those blocks.
Do you have, I'm looking at the exhibit to the Pamilio's brief, and it appears to only be a page and it doesn't go as far south. Do you know how far Block A extends?
No, I do not. If you go to the next page of their attachment, it shows another drawing prepared by another surveyor that doesn't even have any meets and bounds. It's more like a preliminary sketch. And it's got, doesn't have block numbers. It has lot numbers and only on the bay side. They have lots laid out, but no, and block numbers like 1 through 6 are shown on the one sheet, and then it goes on further. And then those don't even have lot numbers except on the one. Block number one has lots 1 through 4. But it, the drawings vary. And those, and that survey shows 20-foot access, but it doesn't describe what type access. And if we interpret that by what we see on the survey, then that 20-foot access is considered a street because it's more than 16-foot alley. And it's not labeled as a pedestrian access. The only difference between the two is that one's labeled for pedestrian only. It's the way you have to assume it. So yeah, that was the intent from the original developer. And if you'll note who stamped those drawings in both cases was Clarence Landis, and he was the liaison officer title at that time, which would now be the director of planning and zoning under the interim zoning ordinance in the between 68 and 1970. And it's, he signed it pursuant to, and I can't quite read what it says. The first one may be clear, let's see. No, I can't read that one. Without reading the original, I'd see the original.
I have no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. Okay. No further. Thank you, Mr. Lane.
Thank you.
There you go. We have heard the direct. So, gentlemen,
any rebuttal or?
Do you want to give you a quick rebuttal if you'd like?
I can offer one additional thing just because it was raised as to the whether it's 10 feet off of the building was to the left of the diagram that you see. It indeed is. In our research, we were unable to determine that a variance was ever granted for that. I think it was just a decision that a 10-foot setback was the appropriate setback in that instance.
So, thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I have a Google Earth that's just a little higher up, not a street level. And I don't know if it's going to confuse the matter or not, but if I can submit it, it's dated 2012, and it shows tire tracks along, it looks like where the road would be, where it's two tires, but when more I look at it, it looks like it might be to the right more, but
okay.
It looks as though there's vehicle traffic on that. Maybe answering Mr. Sharp's question, I think Mr. Blank was referring to my exhibit that showed the sketch. I had a recorded plot of what was down the road, and Mr. Lank was referring to that. And the reason I submitted that is because that shows an identical 20-foot access, and albeit, as Mr. Lank says, it just says access, whereas the one in question here tonight says pedestrian access. But I showed it to show that it's identical in size, identical to the same lot size. It's 20 feet, and it also doesn't line up with another access or street. It's sort of similar. That's all I have.
Mr. Chairman, I've heard good testimonies, as Mr. Lank, excuse me, so say, by both counselors, both lawyers. But I think that with all the information we have, that to digest this a little bit, let's take this case under advisement. I make a motion that we take case number 10928 under advisement.
Okay. Go back. Is the director's decision also that we're going to let stand? Are we going to vote to uphold it or deny it first, and then we would do the case? Would it be a two motions on this case, Mr. Sharp? First, we need the first one to decide on the director's decision, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And then you need to.
Then we can take the case, whether you want to take it under advisement or table it, to have ample time to review the information that was presented to you tonight.
I'm getting a little confused, Mr. Chairman, of what I'm supposed to do here.
Okay.
I want more time to look at this case now. How do I do that?
Well, there's two things. The first order of business is to determine if we should have reheard this case.
Do we get it?
If we should have reheard this case.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should have. I think the evidence points that we should have, so I'd make a
motion. I understand now. I understand.
Make a motion that
we uphold.
We uphold that.
Uphold the director's decision. Correct?
No. That we reconsider the case.
Reconsider the case. Okay.
Such is my motion.
Is that your motion?
That's my motion.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion then by, so you withdraw that other motion then. Okay. Now I have a motion by Mr. Mills and a second by Mr. Rickards that we hear the case number 10,928. Okay? Mm-hmm. All those in favor, reasons that you show?
I believe it deserves our reconsideration.
Okay. Mr. President?
I agree.
I agree. And I agree also for the reasons and everything that we have heard tonight. So by a motion of 5-0, that motion has been approved and we will rehear the case.
Mr. Rickard, before you make your motion, I also agree that that's quite a bit of information to digest, and rather than take it under advisement, I'd be more inclined to make a motion to table.
Put it on another table.
Table it to our next regular meeting.
Okay.
And that's certainly, if you want to talk about it some more at the end of the meeting, that's fine.
Or do you want to withdraw that motion? And well, we got a motion on there.
I'd like to withdraw that motion and have it case number.
Second Mr. Mills' motion then?
Yes.
That we table this to our next regular meeting?
That's correct.
Okay. Great. I've got a motion now by Mr. Mills and a second by Mr. Rickards that we table case number 10,928 until our next regular meeting. All those in favor of the motion? Mr. Rickards. Same reasons.
Stated. Yes. Same reasons.
Mr. Wortman?
Yes.
For the same reasons.
Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
For the reasons stated.
And Ms. Calloway, for the reasons has been stated. By a motion of 5-0, the case number 10,928 has been tabled to our next regular meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Board.